and welcome to Ultimate Voices Europe, the EUF's new diversity podcast, where we highlight backgrounds and perspectives that don't always get the spotlight. My name is Jakob or Dunzi. My pronouns are they, them. I'm currently in Vienna playing for Mosquitoes Mixed.
My name is Annika. My pronouns are she, her. I live in Zurich and I play for ZU Mixed. We are, Jakob and I are both members of the EUF Diversity, Equity and Inclusion Committee. And in that role, we are hosting this podcast. We will be covering different topics related to diversity, such as gender, queerness, ethnicity, age, and more.
And our guest today is an elite player from the women's division, especially known in Europe for their creative roles, Paula Bass. Hello.
Hi, Paula.
Hello.
Hi. Would you like to introduce yourself a bit as well? Let us know who you are, where you're joining us from today, and what your plans are for the rest of this season.
Yes. My name is Paula. My pronouns are they, them. And I'm currently in Diemen, which is next to Amsterdam. I play for Jaka from Noisy-le-Sec. And I also train with Grut, which is practically in my backyard. So that's convenient. And my plans for the rest of the season are winning EUCF, but we'll see how that goes with Jaka, and then going to Beach Worlds and Indoor Euros.
Nice. What divisions are you playing those two tournaments in?
Everything in the women's division.
Nice. Well, I think that's a good way to start because you're predominantly playing the women's division. I think we played Windmill together once in the mixed division, but that's probably the only mixed tournament you played like seriously in a long time. But you aren't a woman. You're a non-binary person playing in the women's division. So what's Ultimate like as a non-binary person?
For me, not much different, hopefully, than for other people. I think, yeah, depending on a bit on the environment that you're in, I think, of course, also because of the mixed division, Ultimate is kind of gendered, although it's also very progressive in other ways, because there are a lot of rules and like a lot of regulations for trans people to be able to play like in their preferred division, etc. But because of how mixed works, there's always this division between like men and women or female matching or however you want to call it. But I'm super happy in the women's division. I wouldn't want to go anywhere and not even to mixed, because I, yeah, indeed haven't played mixed in a long time, except for the one season I was a practice player for Grut. Mixed, and then I went to Windmill. It was fun. We won. Maybe I end my mixed career on that high.
Is there a reason why you prefer the women's division?
I don't like the super big physical differences between, like, let's say, classic men and women. And I know it's not always the case. And some women are physically stronger than men. And some people are not even men and women. So, but for me, like, when I was younger, it would sometimes be a bit frustrating to be, like, the second handler next to some guy who is maybe not even as good as you, but they're just bigger. And maybe, you know, their hugs are a bit further, but maybe their decision making is not as good as yours. But you're always, or I've felt in the past that I was, like, secondary to them, and that didn't feel nice. And I felt like in the women's division, at least every player was seen like more equal or more in line with their strengths and what they can bring to the team, versus mix, where there's always that division between, like, quote unquote, men and women.
Yeah.
So that was partly why I used to play some mix when I was younger, because I was, you know, obsessed with frisbee. So I wanted to play everything. But at some point I stopped.
Yeah, I understand that. I think this is my first proper mixed season. And I kind of share some of those feelings. I'm really tall. That's really helpful in the women's division and not as much in the men's division, for example. Or even if you're fast, oftentimes a male matching player is going to overtake you and snatch that disc away or whatever. So I can really relate to that. But I do think there's also some really interesting aspects, like tactically. And it's also really cool to be able to play with every gender on the field. But yeah, it's always kind of tough, I think, these discussions, especially when we're talking about like transness, when we talk about the differences of bodies, but then like that argument can so easily be used to kind of, yeah, argue against a case that we normally support. That makes sense.
And also like, and we don't want that, right? But of course, it's also important to acknowledge that there are physical differences and that those matter, right? Sometimes. I always hearing you two both speak about this, like I'm a big fan of mixed, and like thinking about how sort of to incorporate also people of different like bodies and skill sets into like a field and how to make that work. And I do think one of the biggest challenges is like female matching throwers not being able to like dominate as they would in a women's division, because throwing is like such an important skill, but male matching players often have a bit more range. And then like we have the same thing like with Kati, right? Meisel, who played with you, Paula, and is like an extremely good thrower, and now she plays with us, and it's just been like a challenge to allow her to have as much impact in the as she can naturally in the women's division, because like throw heavy players translate the difficulty sometimes, and that's really sad, but a task we need to fix, I think.
Yeah, and I think what Annika was saying is like, yeah, sometimes you just get overtaken by some guy from the other team or something, which is tough, and I think for that is just like life. But for me, what's mostly hard is that it's also within your own team. So then what you're explaining about Kati, like, so I think there's a little bit of a difference there, because yeah, technically, like anyone who is faster, taller, stronger than me could probably sky me and like overtake me in a deep run, for example. But if my own teammates are not like, or if people's teammates are not like taking the best out of their own teammates by kind of hiding them on the field somewhere.
Yeah.
I think that for me, I like when I play mixed that I feel like I can contribute. And I like that about Gut. When we played Windmill, I was like on the D-line and I was a handler, and they really allowed me to like pick up the disc to kind of like run the offense on the D-line a little bit. And then that was very enjoyable, because I feel like they knew what my strengths were and they wanted to use like my creative throwing and like that kind of stuff to make their line better. So it really felt like I could bring something to the team and that I was being valued by everyone. And I think if a team can create that for all their players, then I think that could make like a really nice mixed team or mixed division.
Mm-hmm, definitely. If it doesn't turn into dude ball, it's always beneficial for everyone. What kind of came to mind to me as well, we're kind of drifting off the topic, but I think it's also an important point, is when I talk to some, especially men, about Ultimate and the divisions and everything, oftentimes I hear that the mixed division is respected the least. And I kind of wonder why it is. I think a lot of men are like realizing like, oh, women's sport is important, and it's also important to support it and to give visibility and so on. And I think that's kind of like arrived in people's heads a bit. But then so many people that I know, men that I know, are like gonna support the women and go to their games and everything, but they would not want to play mixed. But yeah, I don't know what it is exactly. Sometimes it does seem a bit disrespectful to me on like how people talk about mixed, and it still is disrespectful on some gendered level, but I can't put my finger on it exactly.
Yeah, I agree, because I feel like you have both sides, right? You have like, so we just explored the sort of female matching side of it, where it's just sucks to have less impact on the field than you could have often. And then, but there's also this very gendered, I feel like, male matching perspective of like, I don't know, the game is slower, game is less athletic, all those kind of things or opinions that maybe in some ways are also true, but of course there's always like two sides. Like I played Open Nationals this weekend in Austria, and two or three times when a call was discussed, I heard somebody be like, oh, this is open, or like, I don't know, one guy was marking me and I was like, this is too physical for me. and I'm like a very physical player. And he was like, ah, welcome to Open, haha. And I'm like, so there's still such a clear like sexist implication in these statements,
mm-hmm.
That just because there's women on the field in mixed, it's like less intense or less physical or anything like that. And while maybe the game speed is slower sometimes, like I think that that has nothing to do with intensity or physicality in that sense. So
for sure,
I agree with you that there's still this. There are these kind of implications, and I do think that devalues mixed in the eyes of a lot of. So I think, like, both from a women's player's perspective and from an opens player's perspective, there's sort of arguments. Not saying they're valid arguments, but there are arguments to like devalue mixed, and I feel like it's a very narrow sort of overlap of players that enjoy the kind of challenges that it brings on a competitive level, and like non-competitively, it's a fun division. So I think that's also a bit of the stereotype. At least that's my interpretation.
I think everyone agrees on that last part. It's just fun to play with all of your friends and not just with one gender.
Yeah, and I think it's nice what you say, that some players like this kind of extra that it brings, or this extra complexity and this extra challenge. And I think if you view it as that, like an extra challenge or something to figure out, or what Annika said earlier, like tactically the game is a little bit different. I think if you kind of, as a player, as a coach, embrace those kind of things, it can be fun in that way as well.
Mm.
And I think, yeah, in there are more sports where the men's division or the women's division or the sport itself, it just looks different. So like men's volleyball is mainly very hard serves and hard smashes and short points, which can be fun to watch. And women's volleyball can be way longer rallies with way more excitement, which can also be fun to watch. And I think frisbee can be a little bit similar. Like, yeah, maybe the women's game is a little bit slower, but if you appreciate like this smaller game, or like the more technical, because I do think women are like more technical throwers, for example, they have like smaller windows to throw in, because it's not like, oh, I just throw something shit and I know that my tall teammate is gonna solve that for me. So if you appreciate this kind of like more beautiful game, if yeah. I can say that, then you can appreciate women's as well. And then you can appreciate the mixed division as something that can combine like these two aspects, and yeah, kind of brings the best of both divisions if it's done properly, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's a really, really good statement. But now, kind of circling back to why we have you on this podcast, I think especially on the topic of like, you're a non-binary player in these gender divisions, no matter which division it is, in somewhat gendered. Do you feel our sport like provides enough opportunities for non-binary players to feel included? What do you think could be improved?
I think, especially compared to other sports, like from the regulations perspective, it creates, I think, as much space for people as they want, hopefully. I don't know how other people feel about that, of course, that you can kind of play in whatever division you want to play in. And I'm not sure if there's rules that you can change within a tournament, for example, in a mixed division, which matchup you do. Annika's shaking her head, so I guess that's a no, but kind of to be able to say like, okay, I want to change divisions, or as a non-binary player, I want to be able to play in the women's division and also in the men's division. I think there is room for that in the rules. And then whether there's room for that kind of like socially, I think really depends on where you play frisbee and like the people around you and how teams are kind of made and what their culture is, and if they kind of allow these people to have a space in their team. And like how they make that space. I think those are two separate things, maybe.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you summed it up nicely. Maybe just briefly to clarify, so what the rules are for, like, I don't know, switching what gender match you play as or something, the current gender inclusion policy of the EOF. We've mentioned it once or twice on the podcast before, but how it works is, like, imagine, I don't know, let's say you're a gender fluid person, right? Or you're currently transitioning. So you want to switch what gender match you play as. That is possible at the start of the season. You can like indicate what gender match you want to play as. And if you want to switch during the season, you can do that, but that requires a roster switch. like switching teams would do. So on a mixed team, for example, if you are staying on the same team and you want to switch gender match, that takes one roster swap for the team for this season, and then you can play as that.
Yeah, and that was implemented. Like, it's always a hard line, or like a tough line, between wanting to give as much space as possible to kind of be able to switch between the divisions for the people that actually have those gender identities. But what we kind of saw happening in one or two cases was that there was a trans player on a team, and then for one game, someone in the mix, like there was a trans woman on the team for one game, one of the men on the other team said, "I'm a woman for this game now, so that I can match up against this trans woman," and then changed back. So like, that was a cis man and kept being a cis man playing just with the gender match of a woman, which is not what we want happening. So that's why there has to be some rules to kind of not allow for a misuse of these rules in order to hurt trans people, that like hurts trans people. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. I think when you explain it like that, then that seems kind of fair. I feel like it's probably could be fairer, but I think if the idea is to protect trans people, and that's how you make certain rules, then I think that is at least with the right mindset, or like with the right person that you care about in mind.
Yeah, it's always hard, because like we were also thinking about like, do you make a request to change? But then people that already have to like care about so many different things also having to request then like officially, and then like having to prove it or what? Like, that's why we were like, I think it's easy if we kind of treat everyone the same and it's just a roster change. Yeah.
I think that's fair. Does the roster change count for the max roster changes that a team can do? It would be nice if it didn't count. Like that you see it as a roster change, but it doesn't count for the maximum 3 or 5 that a team can change.
That's a good input.
But it's, yeah,
maybe it's a good input that we maybe can take on board.
For sure. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, so that's the rules at the moment. And then, Paolo, you also mentioned the social aspect of it, which I think is, of course, much more complex than just what the regulations are. But yeah, I do think, or I agree, and also from a personal experience, like Ultimate, I do think is like, compared to other sports and especially like super competitive environments, a great place sort of as a trans person. But there's still like a lot of challenges and a lot of things that people aren't aware of, like or don't have in mind. So I think it's also important to not, how do you say that, like rest on our achievements in that sense. And especially socially, because I feel like it's often overlooked.
Maybe in that context, it also makes sense to kind of give an input on why we talk about transness when talking about non-binary people. Maybe Jakob, you want to?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point. So like generally, right, trans is sort of an umbrella term for all people that do not sort of identify themselves as the gender that is assigned to them at birth. So trans is Latin, means like across, right? Like, so imagine a river, and sort of you're at birth, you're being placed at one side of the river, which is the gender that you're assigned. So like the people that do stay with that gender identity are cisgender. Cis is also Latin for on this side, right? So they're staying on this side of the river. And then if you're trans, you're sort of crossing the river to another gender identity, whatever that may be. And because, well, while non-binary gender identities usually sort of include neither being a man or a woman, or being something in between, or sort of beyond that spectrum of like the binary gender, non-binary people still fall under the umbrella of like trans identities, because they just don't sort of identify as cisgender. So that's why non-binary people like are part of the trans community, but of course also have their own position in that sense, because you don't refer to them as a man or a woman. I think maybe that's as a short explanation. I mean, so we already mentioned like, right, so how is it like within Ultimate as a non-binary person? Paola, I'm still wondering, like, to you, because as a non-binary person that plays in a division that is sort of marked women's ultimate, right? Or the women's division, does that ever feel weird, or is that just sort of an incongruency that you live with because you know sort of how it feels to be part of that division and that's fine for you?
Yeah, I think for me personally, the last one, and I've been playing Frisbee since I was 10 years old and most of it in the women's division. So for me, like, that's where I feel most at home as a person anyway. So even like in my whole process of like realizing that I was non-binary or not a woman or however you want to call it, actually my brother-in-law asked me if I was gonna change to the open division, and I'm like, dude, look at me, of course not. Like, I'm 162. I'm like, no way. And also because I don't like it, you know, I don't suddenly want to play with men necessarily. I don't want to be a man, or so I think that was kind of funny that he asked me, and I was like, no, of course not. But it was a genuine question. Like he didn't understand why it was so obvious for me that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've been playing in this division with the people, against the people, you know, like, for so long that, yeah, that's for me, like, where I belong personally. But I also know that for other trans or non-binary people, it can be different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah, that kind of makes a lot of sense if that's your home, so to say, that division, and that stays your home no matter what you feel like based on your gender identity. Is there anything teams have done or tournaments have done that have made you especially welcomed or validated in your identity? Or is there anything that you think you would like to see?
I think it's more what I would like to see versus what really happened. Or, yeah, it depends. I'm also not, I don't know how to say it correctly. Like, for me personally, also with this, like, playing in the women's division, and for me, it doesn't affect me a lot when someone, like, misgenders me. And I know for some people, it can be really, like, painful or really difficult. And for me, it's just a little bit less painful, less difficult. And I feel pretty privileged because I can kind of like let it slide. And I don't mean by any means that it's not good that you don't let it slide, right? So people have their own preferences. And for some people, you know, it's really important, or really like it hurts them a lot when people misgender them or use their dead name or something like that. And for other people, it's less. And for some people, they feel at home in the women's division, and for other people, not. So I think what is also really important for people to realize is that, like, every trans or non-binary person's experience is unique. And it's a little bit like every person's experience is unique, but especially within this kind of like umbrella that Doons also explained, it's like there are so many different genders, basically, and so many different like types of people that what works for some people doesn't work for others, and what feels nice for some people doesn't feel nice for others. And then there are some things that I mind, but I'm not going to say some things I mind, and I will probably say something about it, and some things I don't mind, or I tell people like, look, I don't mind personally, but other people might mind. So you might still want to change like your language or change the way you speak or think. Because don't have a problem with it doesn't mean that other trans people are not. So I always try to explain to people that trans people, like, every trans person is different, and you should always ask the person like, and what they prefer, and not try to assume something, or just because you know one person that is non-binary, then everyone wants to be that same way or wants to be talked to that same way or something like that.
Yeah,
that's really fair. It's also like, it's often a situation where like you have one person from a specific group and you ask them like, how do you want to be treated? But everyone is an individual as well, of course. Maybe just to kind of help out our listeners to kind of like have examples, would you mind sharing specific examples where, like, you don't have to say if that like bothers you or not, but like things that are, I don't know, helpful if people do it, or less helpful?
Yeah, I think using the right pronouns for someone, I think that's obviously very helpful. Sometimes it can be difficult to ask someone So I've also coached a team here in Amsterdam that was really trying to like include people, and they changed their name, for example, to women and non-binary team. And we always did a round of pronouns at the beginning of training when there were new people. So I think that kind of thing helps. But then there also needs to be that follow-up where then people actually use the right pronouns, because otherwise, you know, everyone said their pronouns. You're maybe one of the only people with different pronouns. So you're already kind of putting yourself out there. Maybe you're a new player. Now you have to say your pronouns just for people to not use them. So I think that, yeah, teams are trying and people are trying. But what is most important is that like individual people also put in the work. And if my team is like, oh, we shouldn't say let's go ladies anymore, but then they do all the time, then it's like, yeah, it's nice that you're acknowledging that you shouldn't do it anymore, or that you're, yeah, kind of trying. But there's like a period where you try, and then there's a period where it just should be better. And that sounds very harsh. But I think that's, yeah. And with some people, I've really noticed that it happens. Like I have a lot of teammates who use the right pronouns for me. And there's also some people that don't do it. And especially with my French teammates, I understand, because they English is not their native language, and they're not as comfortable as, for example, Dutch speaking speakers speaking English. So I'm a little bit more lenient. But I do really appreciate that some of my teammates who are, for example, from the US or from Canada, that English is their native language, that they use they/them. And then when they do, that makes me kind of happy. And then when other people don't, sometimes I'm like, that's okay. And sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish you said that some other way. So
I can really relate to that. I think it's the same like in German. It's a bit more difficult to like, I don't know, so just they/them pronouns are very practical, like in English compared to how it works in other languages. And like German is a very gendered language, so I'm like often sort of it, people misgender me, and I'm like, ah, whatever, like that's the way we speak. But then when somebody does it correctly, or like in Germany, like you have to go out of your way sort of to speak gender neutrally. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, I'm not asking everybody to do that. But then if people do, it's like really nice, and like just feel like acknowledged sort of in my identity. So that's nice. I just had another thought also to what you mentioned of like pronoun introductions, for example. I can share one like good practice from the Austrian national team. We had like open tryouts, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago. And because, so one thing is like, right, having like a round where everybody says their pronouns. But I've experienced also, especially when working with youth or like younger people, maybe where that's also like either people aren't out yet or maybe aren't sure. Like it's just a bit uncomfortable to like be put on the spot in front of a group and say it. What's just, I think, a really nice, good practice is introducing yourself with your own pronouns. So that's also why we do it on the podcast, right? On every episode at the start, or like you can see it in people's Insta bios, for example, who are cisgender, but they still put their pronouns there, just to make it like a common practice to introduce yourself with pronouns. Because even for cisgender people, that kind of implies that you shouldn't just assume someone's pronouns, and like it's fine, or like it's okay for people to say their pronouns. And like if a cis person, so my coach in this case was like, my pronouns are he, him, and that kind of opens the space for other people if they're feeling comfortable to do the same, right?
If they want.
If they want, yeah. And that's just something nice, I think, and very, very, very easy and simple as well.
Yeah, and I think it really helps when cis people also say their pronouns. So it's not like no one says it, or like, oh, just someone who has different pronouns, just raise your hand, because that's like so awkward.
Yeah. And
yeah, so it's nice that like, yeah, you are allowed to not say your pronouns, but if a lot of cis people do it, then it doesn't like make you feel different, or like now you are the only one who has to say something, or
yeah.
So I think that's nice. Yeah.
Well, talking about pronouns, I think something we can also talk about is like commentary, right? So so the way we speak about people, or like the way people are being referred to in commentaries. And for me, and I think I know for you as well, Paolo, like it's been a bit of a journey of like getting commentators to use the right pronouns, or like over time, I think commentators also getting more used to that. I do think we're quite privileged nowadays with like the commentators that frequently comment games in Ultimate. sort of to be quite mindful about like using correct pronouns. But yeah, maybe Paolo, if you could tell us a bit about how that was for you and how maybe how it feels like to be referred to with they, them pronouns when you watch a game of yourself that is being streamed.
Yeah, no, it's really nice sometimes. I know I remember at the beginning, then you sign up like at the EUF website and you have to sign your waiver and then you have to put your pronouns. And then I did, but then the commentators didn't use that. So I'm like, okay, why am I putting it? And also there are only three options. So it's like he, him, she, her, they, them, and nothing else. And I'm like, okay, but what if I'm a combination of those things or what if, you know, something else? So that's kind of how it started. But then also on like Ulti TV, when you have to write like a little bit about you, I always put then my pronouns there. And then at some point, people kind of started learning. And then sometimes I would watch games where I was playing and then I could hear the commentator maybe doing it wrong one time, but then doing it right the second time. And then eventually just people getting it right almost all the time. So also credits, I guess, to the commentators in Europe who I feel are all like trying really hard and actually doing it as well. So not what I said first, like, okay, you're trying, but it never changed. Just I feel like it really changed. So that's really nice. I do wonder what it's like for maybe players who are a little bit less known. So I think commentators know me quite well. Also, I know some of them really on a personal level. So it's easier for them maybe that because they know me more personally. To remember my pronouns. But if I'm like number 24 on a roster and somewhere is my name and they don't really know me and then I wrote my pronouns and now suddenly I'm doing something super cool on the stream, like, will they also there get those pronouns right? This, I don't know. And I'm hoping that maybe other people with non, like she, her, he, him pronouns feel like when they listen to their stream as well, that they also get kind of the same treatment. So that's the same for everyone, whether people know you or not.
Yeah, for sure. I think, I mean, we've also touched on that quite often, right? Like that popularity, like, or just sort of how well you're known matters and is not always also like fairly distributed among the community. But also like just while you were speaking, I was also like, oh yeah, but also having role models like you in that case is super nice because that empowers maybe other people to actively request their pronouns being used correctly, stuff like that. I just had one thought while you were saying of like commentators getting it right or maybe doing sort of getting it wrong at the start and then learning over time or correcting themselves. I often hear that when I give workshops, also when I talk to people, that people who try to be allies but just have not maybe had like a lot of sort of interaction with trans people are worried about getting it right or like getting it wrong and sort of I hear that, like, I feel like I never get it right regardless of what. And like a part of me is maybe a bit annoyed about like, you know, people being this defensive of like, oh, you know, I'm doing something wrong. I cannot never get it right, sort of, while it's not actually that complicated. But also I really want to say like, and that's a huge thing. The most important part is trying. And then it's also a matter of like learning or relearning language, right? And that means you're going to make mistakes. And that means it's okay to make mistakes as long as you try to improve. So I really encourage people to not be worried about making mistakes.
I think I just have a story of one of my friends who's non-binary who like always says like, I think the worst thing people can do is if they do a mistake, fine. But if they do a mistake and then like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I've like completely negated your whole person and identity. Like, it's okay to make a mistake and you can say sorry and then continue with your day.
Yeah.
It's what I've heard. Obviously, I'm cis. I can't speak for everyone, even less than you two can. But that's, I don't know, something that has really stuck with me. And like, I also sometimes make mistakes, but people know that I try. And I think, that's something.
I think there are some ways that kind of like you said, like if you do it wrong and you kind of make it about yourself, that's not really good practice. And it's also just uncomfortable for the person involved.
Exactly.
So I think trying not to apologize is a good first step. And then always repeating yourself when you notice repeating yourself with the correct pronouns, because that's actually like overriding your brain that did it wrong. So instead of maybe saying sorry and just continuing, you go back and like, if you say sorry, I mean, it's fine. But then, you know, repeat the same sentence and use the correct pronouns. I think that's one way to kind of like practice. And then sometimes maybe, and this is a bit excessive, but if you really have someone and you notice that you're struggling and this is your teammate and you want your teammate to feel comfortable, it's like, go have a conversation about them with someone and just use that. Like, oh, they are so good at distro. Oh yeah, no, right. When I saw them at training last week, I don't know, we biked together and they were telling me about their work. Like, force yourself to sometimes just say those pronouns about that person in a conversation that you're having with someone else, where you're just kind of, again, overriding those kind of paths in your brain with the correct pronouns. And then maybe you make a few mistakes while you're talking to someone else instead of while you're talking to that person. I think is like maybe an advice that I would give to individuals that are maybe struggling with this.
Yeah, I think that's really, really good advice, because I think it's hardest for people that have known someone with different pronouns than they have now. If you've met someone with those pronouns, maybe it's also already easier. But then you're kind of like, yeah, override an automatic pronoun setting, whatever, is definitely a really good tip. Yeah, I think we're kind of looking at the clock. We come to the timing where you can bring a question to us, Paola, if you have something.
I have a question a bit unrelated to this topic. I'm quickly going to look it up because I phrased it before in a way that I thought doesn't become a huge ramble like I'm doing now. It's about spirit of the game. So it's a bit of a different topic, but it's also something that I think your committee, or like, it concerns, I guess, this diversity and this difference between certain people that I think the committee is also concerned about. So the question is, what do you think about cultural difference or any other type of difference when it comes to spirit of the game and interpretation of spirit of the game? And what are some actions that federation teams and players can take to uphold a certain standard of spirit of the game against teams that like interpret it differently, or in games where there is a difference? Like, how do you navigate, or what are some tools maybe, or what are your opinions? I made a ramble anyway, but it's okay.
I think it's good though that we kind of fully get the question. I think it's also a question we should maybe ask our spirit committee and chair, because I think that's something that they probably have like deal with a lot. I can imagine, or like I know that there's differences. Even you talked about it shortly before, Dunzi, about how in the different divisions, people interpret spirit and physicality and like what is positive attitude, but then also within nations or teams.
Yeah, I mean, so I was thinking about this question before. And like, I do think you're totally right, Annika, that there's diversity sort of also in the way we live spirit of the game, right? Mm-hmm. And that diversity sort of comes with diversity within groups. So that's either like culture or background or gender or how competitively you're used to being played, right? So all of those things, like are differences between people, and those will reflect in how they want to live like spirit of the game. So I do think in that sense, it's also a spirit question, but it's also very much a diversity question.
Definitely.
Interesting for us. And like my first idea was just maybe that's something in, so I'm already used to like teams sometimes being like in the pre-game circles, right? Telling a specific rule they care about a lot. For example, if stuff doesn't really affect the game, we prefer like calls not being made, or like, oh, we're really looking for offsides, or I don't know. Usually it's something very like small. But I think especially when it comes to like cultural differences, that would be something interesting, I think, to adopt, like to talk about as well before games. So like that some teams are like, hey, I don't know, we just don't like culturally, we don't like to play very physically, or like sometimes you will see us react strongly first, and we ask you like to not sort of escalate that situation because of that reaction, because that's just our sort of maybe way of communicating. That doesn't mean we're actually like trying to escalate the situation. Something like this just comes to mind. I think a lot is also, of course, related to like language and language barriers, maybe. But I think that's some, like, I don't even know, like, I don't know, for example, what would the Austrian culture be like spirit wise? Like, it's, I think you would need to find that for yourself in order to communicate it as well. But I think it's something interesting to think about.
Yeah. I think the pre-spirit circles are definitely a good idea in some contexts, especially in like the big tournaments where you have long games where like, yeah, you can talk about, we have had teams be like, oh, we're from this country and we tend to be a little bit more hot-headed, just bear with us and we will try to calm ourselves down, or like, and I think that's a really good like way to do it. But I do think there's also so many tournaments where a pre-spirit circle is not really, I don't know, necessary or like,
yeah,
makes sense. Yeah, Dunzi.
Yeah, just to add to that, like, because so I think we've both like sort of been like very neutral at like a country or a culture that is hot-headed, but that also has like stereotypes involved as well, right? So I have for sure like have countries coming up in my mind now when talking about this, and I know personally that I also have like a precognition of, oh, I don't know, if we play against this nation, people are going to be fiery and I'm not going to enjoy it. And that maybe sometimes like based on my experience, but often probably also based on racist assumptions that I just make because I'm a white European person. And so I think that's also important to reflect. And yeah, like even if it's based on experience, that experience has also happened within the context of like a racial bias that we all carry within ourselves, right? So it's also important to be careful about like that kind of thinking. But I mean, talking about it, I think is also a good step to reflect it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my main thought about this as well. And of course, I've had a lot of conversations about this because I think it's an interesting and an important topic, is that these kind of racial biases that already exist before games begin, and then kind of, yeah, some behaviors that happen kind of confirming the bias that you already have. And then it also affects the way that you handle that game or the way that your spirit is. And then it becomes kind of an unpleasant game between both teams, and like both teams find that the other team is unspirited and both teams don't find that they are unspirited, but actually they're both doing right things and they're both doing wrong things, I guess. I love the pre-spirit circle, honestly. I think it's super useful, especially like in those tournaments where you're playing against teams that you've maybe had some issues in the past, or that you know that you have some bias, or you know there's going to be a language barrier, or like people kind of communicating that and saying things like, hey, we care about this and we find this important, I think can be super useful. And I don't know, sometimes wish that people would be a little bit more, like take it a little bit more seriously, spirit in general, and also these kind of things, because like also at summer tour, every time the other team came up to me and was like, oh, should we do the pre-spirit circle? And I'm like, yes, because it's mandatory, but also because, you know, because I genuinely think that it can be helpful, and it's maybe not always. And maybe that's also kind of where like maybe the spirit of the game committee or this committee comes in, and it's like, maybe it's time to start informing people or making this kind of like making people aware of their biases, or explaining even better how to use the pre-spirit circle, because in the captain document, there's already kind of like an explanation of what can be said. But yeah, I'm kind of hoping that, for example, at Windmill, they had a couple of years where they had these kind of gender talks or something, where like the Rainbow Brigade or other people. And then like these kind of conversations about spirit of the game just need to happen way more often, instead of people just going on Reddit and being like, oh, that France-Colombia game sucked at World Games. Yeah, of course. But it's like there's so much more to that. Mm-hmm. And it's all rooted, also what Dunzi said, in like kind of this Western, white, European point of view, where we feel like how we see spirit is like the default, and how other countries are doing it, they are more or less than we are. But why is like the white spirit of the game, let's say like that, why is that the default? And why, maybe because more white people play frisbee, or we are all playing in Europe against countries where we're kind of like similar, so now we're playing against a country from somewhere else. But for example, for us, I'm rambling a bit as well, but in Windmill, we had some games against the Japanese teams, but we also had some games against Colombian teams. And why do we experience spirit against one team that is not from Europe very differently than against the other team?
Yeah.
Is it really because of the things that happen on the field, or is it also because of the bias that we have towards these teams? And if we never speak about that, I think there's always going to be those really bad spirit games.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like there can be changes, and it's not about one person making a bad call. It's about like how like we all interpret it and yeah, see spirit of the game or something. I feel like there's a lot to be gained still there.
So yeah.
Definitely. I think definitely like makes sense to talk ahead of a game about spirit when you have a productive conversation and people aren't just like, yeah, okay, guess have a good game, but actually like say things that they're trying to work on, or especially things that they that are important to them. And I think that kind of like sums up this episode really well, of like just talking about stuff, like talking about spirit, even with your friends, about like maybe some biases you might have. But then also like I really take on that advice that you gave, Paola, about like talking to overwrite some pronoun settings in your brain, or just talking about stuff.
Yeah, usually helps. If you do it respectfully and with intent to like change, right?
Definitely. We usually ask our guests to give a shout out if they want. A shout out or like highlight some like cool initiative related to diversity, equity, inclusion, ideally, but you can also just give a shout out to someone that you like.
I think staying a bit on like the trans non-binary topic, I think a lot of people in the US have been working really hard in the last few months, kind of behind the scenes because of everything that was happening in the US in terms of like regulations for trans people in sports and that kind of stuff, and kind of whether the USAU was going to follow those rules or stick with their kind of inclusion policy that includes trans people still. And they prepared like a lot of stuff, and they made like statements, and they like corresponded with the USAU, which is not always easy. And in the end, I think the decision was that the USAU for now at least is going to stick to their policies of including trans people the way that they've been doing in the past, at least. But kind of like, I'm in a Discord. I'm a lurker in a Discord channel with a lot of trans people. And just seeing how much effort people are putting into that and how much willingness there was from these people and all of the communities that they were in to kind of like fight or like to do something for trans people to keep Frisbee as inclusive as possible, even in a country where things are going kind of the other way. I think that I wanted to shout out.
That's a lovely shout out.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you, Paola.
Yeah, well, thank you, Paola. It was really nice having you on, talking about these things. I feel like we could go on for another hour, but I think it's also good to end it here, maybe in a future episode. But anyway, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll see you next week at UCF. Very excited.
Goodbye. Thank you. Bye-bye.